Roll down tide.
From the Clark Ford Studio in Oxford, Mississippi, this is the Beer Garden presented by Oxford Crystal.
I'd like to hear a little bit more conviction in your take, though. There was a lot of maybes, a lot of what ifs, a lot of questions. You need to just get on here. You need to fire and put me in a position where I have to tell you that you're wrong.
And now, here's your host, Neil McCready.
Nice. Nice.
Welcome into another edition of the Beer Garden, presented by Oxford Crystal. I'm Neil McCready. Today on the show, Ben Ingram, the Atlanta Braves Radio Network, kind enough to spend more than a half hour talking about the NL East champs, the upcoming National League playoffs. We look at the American League playoffs that should be awfully exciting. We talk some free agency, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, a lot of baseball here on the show. If you're looking for a change of pace after all of the football, or as you're driving down to Baton Rouge or wherever you might be headed for the weekend, I think you'll enjoy a little more than a half hour of Major League Baseball talk, playoff preview with Ben Ingram. We'll get to that in a minute. First, let me tell you about the people who make this show possible. First of all, it's the Oxford Crystal, of course, just next door to the Oxford Exxon on Highway 6 West in Oxford. Go fill up at the Oxford Exxon and then fill up at the Oxford Crystal. Get the three egg plate combo featuring cold peak coffee to start your day. And then after that, it's the $2 square meal, the $3 square meal, the $4 square meal, all depending on just how hungry you are. Crystal can take care of you. If you're super hungry, or maybe you're driving in a group headed down to Tiger Stadium or headed back up from Tiger Stadium, nursing a few cold ones, or nursing the hangover from a few cold ones, grab the 12 crystal combo. You and some buddies get 12 crystals, two medium fries, two medium drinks there at the Oxford Crystal. And don't forget, purchase a large drink and be a contestant for a chance to win concert tickets, the Sprite concert giveaway, presented by Crystal. We're coming to you from the Clark Ford Studios. Clark Ford's in Amory, Mississippi. 662-257-1900. Call the number, ask for Corey Clark. Tell Corey what new Ford you're looking for. He'll send you a quote within 15 minutes in business hours. It's that simple. No hassle. Get your quote. Shop it around if you'd like. You'll end up coming back to Corey, and you'll be glad you did. Corey wants to be your car guy. He wants to be your truck guy. He'll take care of you. And you can enjoy all of the benefits that people like me and all the listeners to the podcast have, who have taken advantage of Clark Ford, have enjoyed by being a Clark Ford customer. So again, 662-257-1900. At the end of your deal, tell Corey that you heard about Clark Ford on the Beer Garden. You'll save $500 on your deal at Clark Ford in Amory. We're also brought to you by Community Mortgage. It's located in Oxford, Memphis, DeSoto County, and Chattanooga. It's 30 years old this year. It's one of the oldest mortgage companies in the Southeast. All of the underwriting and the processing is done in Memphis, so you're getting local underwriting that understands your market. It's also the leader in condo financing in the Oxford market. So ask Jason Lowe about Community Mortgage's float down option. It allows you to lock in the current rate, but if rates go down before you close, you can get the lower rate. Send him an email, jlowe, J-L-O-W-E, at communitymtg.com. We're also brought to you by Strategic Partners and Media. SPM is a full-service advertising agency, works with businesses of all types, big or small, Fortune 500 companies to startups. SPM can help your advertising needs for TV, radio, print, and every facet of social and digital media. Look, here's why SPM is really good and different than other ad firms. They handle everything in-house. They don't sub their work out, the writing, the production, the editing. It's all done solely by their staff and crafted uniquely for their clients. And lastly, an Ole Miss grad and Mississippian is a partner in the firm. So give them a call and see just how great they are. It's Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. Again, Austin at strategicpartnersmedia.com. And we're brought to you by LB's Meat Market. LB's is the place in Oxford. It's a place in all of North Mississippi, frankly, to get the absolute freshest cuts. It's 2008 University Avenue across from Kroger in Oxford, 662-259-2999. Call Greg Jones. ahead of time if you're coming up for the Louisiana Monroe game next weekend. Call Greg. Let him know what you want. He'll set you up. He'll have you completely ready to go. Or you can go in and just browse a little and enjoy everything you see there at LB's. The fresh cuts we talk about all the time. The bone-in ribeyes. The filet mignon, strip steak, brisket, all the other, any other fresh cut you might want, let Greg know. He'll get it for you. They've got poultry, pork, seafood, fresh from the Gulf, all the sausages, chicken sausages, pork sausage, beef sausage, smoked sausage. It's all there. It's all delicious. They also have a beer fridge on your left. Grab a six-pack. Make a six-pack of your own of craft beer, normally $9. It's $6 just by telling Greg that you heard about LB's on the Beer Garden. So without further ado, let's go to Ben Ingram. Let's talk some Major League Baseball as the regular season winds to a close and the postseason gets ready to begin next week. The Atlanta Braves will be in it, and we talked to Ben about that. Take a listen. All right, Ben, I appreciate you spending some time with us. It's funny, when we talked before the season, I'm probably not the greatest mind reader in the world, but I could tell you liked this Braves team. You thought like everyone, that the good young players were going to change the path of the franchise pretty soon. But I didn't gather from talking to you, and you didn't say this, so if your bosses are listening, you didn't talk bad about the Braves, but I didn't gather from talking to you that you thought this was the season the Braves would win the National League East. I would have bet after talking to you that you thought maybe next year was the season that the Braves broke through and won a division and positioned themselves to make a run at the pennant. Am I right?
Yeah, 100%. This team, to me, has exceeded what I expected. This team, I felt, would be around 500 at best. I think Vegas had them at 74 and a half wins. I was thinking 75, 76, and maybe if that was the ceiling I set for the team. And I just saw what the lineup looked like. I thought they'd have a difficult time scoring runs. I knew the issues they might have with the bullpen. And I think there were still some questions in my mind about the defense for this. I thought they would be better, and I thought that they would be making a run for 2018 that would give fans confidence that 2019 could be the breakthrough year. But they have been so far ahead of schedule and done things that I never thought that they could do. They've never been season. They never had a losing streak of more than four games, which blew my mind. And they have found answers from guys that I didn't think would be ready to step up and make it happen yet. So it's been amazing to see them. I mean, it's been unbelievable to see a team like the Nationals be the most disappointing team in Major League Baseball. I think they've been the biggest underachievers in baseball. So it's amazing what can happen over the course of 162 games. You just really want ideas of what we think is going to happen before the season begins. But this is one of the biggest surprises to me in all of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, you know, when you think about the fact that Atlanta didn't bring Acuna up until, you know, what, almost a month into the season, you wonder what they could have been had he broken, and they did the right thing from a business standpoint, no question about it, but you wonder what they would have been, what the record would have been had he played from opening day on.
Yeah, and I'm glad they never had to worry about, it's going to come down to one game, and what would have happened had you had him out there the first 3 weeks of the season. They dodged a bullet with that. I thought that was going to be something that could come up and bite him, because as things were coming down the stretch, from August into September with a month left, it was get into the final week of the season and start to think, oh, goodness, what might have been had Acuna been here to start the season? This could have cost you a shot at the postseason. So they didn't have to worry about that. I think he missed the first 20 to 20 earlier in the year, but it was plain and simple a manipulation of service time, so they could get to arbitration a year later. So, like you said, it's a smart move, and it's one that they're able to get away with. It's something exactly similar to what the Cubs did, Ryan, a few years ago. And when it pays off, that's a big win for the organization. I know it is for the Braves. So they bring up Acuna, and I think Acuna is going to be the rookie of the year in the National League. And I can say that simply because of what are very, very similar individually, but who meant more to his team. And if I can give a guy credit for him getting a team into the postseason and that helping with his for the Rookie of the Year award, I think that Ronald Acuña has played a huge role in the success of this team. So, yeah, you're right. They could have been even better had they had him the first 3 weeks, but it played out well for the Braves. And I think him meaning this team means he's the Rookie of the Year.
No, I agree with that completely. I think Acuña wins it. I think he should win it. It's nothing against Soto, who was, as you mentioned, fantastic and is a brilliant young player. In fact, I was telling someone the other day that over the next decade, assuming that they both stay healthy, I think Acuña and Soto will both at least win one MVP each. They're both just phenomenal players. But on the balance of this season, yeah, Acuña was more valuable to the Braves than Soto was to the Nationals, and that's probably not debatable. They both have massive careers in front of them. There's not much that either of them can't do. They're both really fun to watch. You know, it's funny you mentioned Chris Bryant and the Cubs. It's tempting if you're looking at the Braves to say, well, this is the beginning. This is the beginning of a window. It's much like the Cubs in 15. The window's wide open, et cetera, et cetera. And that's probably true, but you don't know what will happen with injuries. You don't know what will happen with how guys handle success, what happens with the rest of the division, what happens with the rest of the league. You probably know where I'm going. Atlanta gets what a lot of people will view as a free shot coming up next week in the division series. But you never know how many of these shots they have. What is sort of the organizational approach to these playoffs?
I think you find yourself in a position that you didn't expect to be in. So, like you, I thought 2019 and 2020 were really going to be the years. And the good news for Braves fans is this coming off season, everyone was expecting this team to be in a position where they could go spend money. And they still are. And I think you add the schedule, I think that makes them a little bit more attractive to free agents that they're looking to pursue. Also, in the minor leagues, that's where, to me, that's what can keep this window open for an extended amount of time, simply because at each level, every level, this has been a farm system that for the last 2.5 to 3 years has been highly regarded as one of the best in Major League Baseball. So there's a lot of depth there. That does not mean that you're going to get wave upon wave. I mean that. You may see that extended period where you're seeing all these players come up year after year after year, and you just stay really good for the longest time. But I don't think you can bank on that. Go ask the Nationals how that went for them. I think they were in a position after their 2012 season where they thought to themselves, we're good now. We have so many young players. We have money to spend, and we have guys coming up in the farm system. We should win this division the next 4 or 5 years in a row. And furthermore, we should have a lot of postseason success as well. That didn't happen for them. We've seen that. We have no idea how this thing's going to play out. So I've seen both sides of it. I've seen the Cubs and the Astros both tear it all down, rebuild, spend money wisely, and rely on their prospects to come up. And that won both of those franchises World Series. And I've also seen the other side where we have the Nationals. So you don't know. And I think anytime you get into the postseason, you have to take advantage of that. It's so hard to get there. I don't think you can ever get to a point where you just take for granted winning the division. I think if you're a team like the Red Sox or the Astros or the Cubs or the Dodgers and you win your division, it's still a reason to celebrate, but you're supposed to get there. I think for Braves fans, they can appreciate this and enjoy it maybe a little bit more so than some of those other teams because this wasn't expected. If Alex Cora had not gotten to the Red Sox for the postseason, he would have been looked at as a failure. Same thing with A.J. Hinch, same thing for Joe Maddon, same thing for any of these managers who were supposed to do really well. I don't think the Braves were supposed to be there. So I don't think that means you just say, okay, we're happy. We've exceeded our expectations. We'll just take our division crown and go home now and bow out to a better team. I think you have to take that and say, we're so much further ahead. This is an opportunity for us to cash in. We never know when we're going to get back again. I think the forecast looks bright. You see 20, 21, 22-year-old guys all over the place, and you're in the postseason. But that doesn't guarantee anything. It certainly doesn't guarantee health. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to be a free agency. So every trip to the postseason is an opportunity every trip of the postseason is something that you should value and treasure no matter how you got there. I think that's how this team is looking at it.
A lot of talk about Acuna, a lot of talk about Freddie Freeman, especially earlier in the year as being in the MVP race. It certainly looks like Christian Yelich will win that. But I thought the job Brian Snitker did managing this team. Yes, it's talented, and they've done a great job of putting the organization together. But it's a bunch of kids who've never done this before, and I kept waiting, like a lot of people, for Atlanta to sort of kind of hit that rookie wall, if you will, and it just never happened. How much of that credit goes to the job that Snitker and his staff did?
I think they have to get a lot of credit for it. And to me, when it comes to the manager of the year in each league, right or wrong, it seems to go to the manager that did the most with the least. In other words, kind of going back to what I was saying a moment ago, you had high expectations for the Dodgers, so therefore maybe Dave Roberts doesn't get as much credit as other managers. You have high expectations for Terry Francona, and maybe he doesn't get as much attention as some other folks. I think when it comes to the National League and American League Manager of the Year, who's done the most with the least? I think that would be Snit here in Atlanta, and I think that'd be Bob Melvin in Oakland. And the thing that those two teams have in common is they don't have the payroll that Boston has, that LA has, that Chicago has, yet they're there. And it seems like year in, year out, those are the managers who win that award. And for the Braves, if you want to go deeper and put it under the microscope, like you just mentioned, I don't think that you could have thrown just any manager into this situation with the same result. The guys are very quick to defend their manager, to speak highly of their manager. The other day when the team was popping champagne bottles after winning the division, and we've got a microphone in all those guys' faces, and we're running all that audio on our post-game show, every single guy, without even us prompting them with a question, but was giving credit to Brian Snitker and the coaching staff. They've got a bunch of good former baseball rat coaches, guys who were good players, dirty players. What I mean by that is grinders. I don't mean dirty in a negative sense, but just guys who would be dirty head to toe, their uniform, and the guys that you wanted on your team. And it's not just Snit, who's been a lifer in this organization, has been here for over 40 years. You got Walt Weiss, who was a grinder if there ever was, and who's done such a great job with helping this team run the bases better and maximize their abilities on the bases and steal more bases. That's the kind of guy you wanted on your team. Ron Washington's a guy that was had his team ready to do anything they wanted when he was managing in Texas and when he was a bench coach in Oakland. Players love these guys, and they love how they played. And I think when those guys were players themselves, their teammates enjoyed having them there. So I don't think it's just Snit. I think it's that entire bunch. And I'm what do with the cast that they have. They've been given some good pieces, no doubt about it. But let's be honest, this lineup, this roster, top to bottom, isn't as talented as what Washington had, yet Washington severely underachieved. The Braves, one of that goes to I think a lot of that credit goes to your coaching staff and your manager as well. I think some of the problems that the Nationals have had this season is missing a veteran like Jason Worth patrolling that clubhouse. The Braves have that, Nick Markakis. And also missing someone like Dusty Baker, who had a lot of experience as a manager of that ball club, and going to Dave Martinez. I think Dave Martinez has had a nice coaching career, but this is his first go-around with that. And there are probably other problems that they've had as well. But their 25-man roster is a lot. The Braves are in the catbird seat winning the division. I think you have to give a ton of credit to the manager, his coaching staff, knowing how to manage that ball club. Because it's not just about those and putting guys in the room. You have to be a guy who knows how to get the most out of all 25 guys in that room, and that's not easy to do. And he's been able to do that really efficiently, and I think he deserves a ton of credit for what they've accomplished.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. So let me ask you this. As we tape this, it's Wednesday afternoon. The National League West is up for grabs. The Dodgers at this taping have a half-game lead over the Rockies. The National League Central is up for grabs. As we tape this, the Cubs have a half-game lead over the Milwaukee Brewers. As we tape this, the wild card is somewhat up for grabs. Probably the only team that is secure for a wild card bid is the loser of the Cubs-Brewers race. The Rockies and the Cardinals, and I guess the Dodgers, all separated by a total of one game. It looks like Atlanta is going to be in the 2-3 series in all likelihood. Who is, in your opinion, the best potential matchup for the Braves in a five-game division series? And who out of all those teams that I just mentioned is potentially the worst?
I'll start with the worst. And I think the worst to me would be either Milwaukee or L.A. And the reason I say that is I think those two lineups have as much depth as any lineup in the National League. I know that when the Braves played them, they had a really difficult time maneuvering through those lineups. Starting pitching you'd get that second trip through the order, and those guys are having a difficult time, and you're sitting on 70, 80, 90 pitches in the third and fourth inning. So those lineups really grinded down Braves starting pitching, and they're having to go into the bullpen in the fifth, sixth inning of ball games, and they're having a difficult time throwing strikes. Lineups are going to make you throw you their pitch. They're very disciplined at the plate. They're not going to strike out a ton. And going 0-1 is so crucial on those batters, because if you start going 1-0 on all these guys, they're going to eat you alive. And I don't think that's true for everybody's lineup has depth. Everybody can make you pay, but I think those two franchises wore the Braves down with their lineup more than any two lineups that I've seen in the National League this year. So I think those would be probably the worst matchups for the Braves. Also, like the bullpens for LA and Milwaukee. I think Milwaukee has a really good bullpen. Starting pitching is pretty good, but their bullpen is phenomenal and their lineup is very deep. And I'd say the same thing for LA as well when they're really rolling. I think the best matchup would probably be Colorado. The Braves and the Rockies played 7 games against each other this year, and there are some really, really good games. Braves went out to Colorado earlier in the season, took 2 out of 3. Rockies came to Atlanta, took that series, and played some really tight ball games. And the Braves had some critical mistakes late in games that cost them. Bullpen issues were a problem for that series as well. But it was some really, really good baseball. And I think that the Braves lineup would have more success against Rockies starting pitching than I would versus L.A. or Chicago, or rather L.A. or Milwaukee. To me, that's the matchup that those guys in the clubhouse aren't saying out loud but that they want, but I feel like that's what they're pulling for. I think the Rockies, where you get games 1-2, and if there's a necessary game 5, then you'd have that here as well. I think that's what they would want. I just didn't fare all that well versus L.A., had a good series versus the Brewers here, won that series, but in Milwaukee was not a competitive series at all. Brewers won 3 of 4, hit a bunch of home runs, and just grinded down the Braves. So to me, that's who they would want to see would be Colorado, and I think a mix of Milwaukee and L.A. would be the worst-case scenario. Cubs, I have no idea. Those two teams split 3 apiece in the 6 games that they had this year, and we didn't see them really much towards the end of the season. There was that one makeup game in Atlanta at the end of August. Outside of that, everything was in the first half of the season. So it's been a while. So those are the matches. And the thing is that I'm really excited about with the National League, I don't see one team that I'd say that's the team that you have to beat in order to get to the World Series. I could see it being chalk with the Cubs going all the way through just as easily as I could see a team like the Braves or the Brewers being a wrecking ball team and blitzing right through the National League side of things. So it's wide open in the National League. And you can be hot, you can be cold, it doesn't matter. We've seen teams that were ice cold in September, heat up in October. We've seen the opposite of that as well. So we'll see how things play out. Pitching is key. Swing and miss stuff from your rotation is key as well. And I can't wait to see how this thing's going to play out.
You know, I kind of think we're going to get a Cubs-Brewers series one way or the other. I like Milwaukee in that series. I don't care where it starts. Mm-hmm. I think Milwaukee, you nailed it, their bullpen, their lineup. The Cubs look tired to me as a guy that watches them every night. They just look exhausted. They've had a run of injuries with Morrow and now Strope, where I thought, frankly, that was an unforgivable managerial mistake with Pedro Strope in the game in Washington. Bryant's not healthy. The Addison Russell situation has been a distraction. To me, the Cubs are the one team that I know they have, as we tape this, by a half game, the best record in the National League. They're nowhere close to the best team in the National League. The Dodgers have played awfully well late. They look scary. And then Atlanta's fun. Here's what's interesting about Atlanta, and you tell me kind of how you anticipate Snitker does this. I love Foltynewicz. I've loved him all year. He's big time. This is going to be his first playoff experience. No one will know until he takes the ball in a playoff game how that phases him or doesn't phase him. Sort of, how do you anticipate the Braves setting up their rotation? I know it does depend in some degree on who they're facing in the division series, but just versus vanilla Team X, how do you sort of see them lining up their rotation for that series?
Well, I think we have the answer to that, and they've announced their starters through the end of the season, through Sunday in Philadelphia. And we were talking about this last night on our broadcast. I feel like with the way that they have this thing lined up the rest of the way, it tells me that it would be game one, Gausman in game two, Aníbal Sánchez in game three. That's my hunch. It's those three I agree with. I feel like those are the three guys that you want to go with in some order for the divisional round of the playoffs. And if you make it beyond that, you have to add a fourth, and that's a whole other debate, whether it's Tehran or Tucson or Newcomb. And those three guys are either very inexperienced or have their struggles. But I think those other three have separated themselves. And the debate comes in which order of these three do you want to use? Because I could make a case for all three. Folty is the guy that has the overpowering stuff. He has the best stuff on the team. And when he's ahead 0-1, when he's throwing strikes, when he's able to be efficient and not have a high pitch count halfway through the ballgame, he's probably your best pitcher. But the thing is, you have no idea which Mike Foltynewicz you're going to get. Now, the good news is the bad Foltynewicz isn't near as bad as the bad Foltynewicz from a year ago. He's come leaps and bounds since then. He's made a lot of progress this year. But I think as far as stuff goes, you put him out there and you hope that he is as good as we have seen, as we're used to seeing him when he's at his best. If he's not, then you have a couple of guys right after that that aren't near as overpowering, but are very efficient, have good stuff, can go deep in ball games. I can make a case for Aníbal Sánchez because this is a guy who's been there before. He's pitched in the World Series. There's not going to be a stage too big or lights too bright or a moment where he scares off and shrinks in the situation. He's not going to go out there and fan 13 guys, but I think he's going to keep you in the ball game, and I think he can get it into the seventh inning and make it a competitive affair. I would say the same thing for Kevin Gausman. I like Gausman's stuff a little bit better than Sanchez, but he has pitched in the postseason before. He doesn't have a ton of experience, but he was there with the Orioles 4 years ago. And a guy with good stuff, and if he's got that split finger what it needs to do, he's going to be pretty fitty. So those are your three. I feel like I could make a case for any of those three guys being the one in the division series, but the way that they've lined it up, I really think it's going to be Foltynewicz, and I give him a lot of reason for the growth that he showed this year. Last year, if you look at his first 21 starts of the year, I think he made 29 starts altogether. He numbers-wise, he was really, really good. He had a fantastic first 4 months of the season. His last 10, 11 starts of the year, he fell off a cliff. And you could just tell it was a young man who had never pitched that deep into a season, had never accumulated those kinds of innings. He was out of gas. And I think what we saw out of September is exactly what we've seen out of Sean Newcomb this year in August and September. He's been completely out of gas, in my opinion. He's got an ERA over 7 in his last 8 starts. Folty this season in August and September has been a completely different pitcher. And whatever he gained last year, just the feeling of going through physically, what he gained in between the years, the kind of wisdom that he had from going through those struggles last year, whatever he's done and whatever he gained, he put it all together to last through an entire season. So I think for that, maybe that's why he gets the ball in game one. That and this stuff can be as good as anybody's. And I think that's how they would line this up. Folty 1, Gausman 2, Sanchez 3.
Let's say they're down 2-1 going into a game 4. Do they do the 3-day rest thing and bring Folty back, or do they do maybe the more conservative, cautious thing and go with a game 4 starter and save him for a game 5 on full rest?
I think that comes down to a couple of things. Number one, is the game that Folty pitched, is that the one that they won? In other words, did he look really good in game one and then they lost games 2 and 3? Bringing back a guy on short rest is something that I'm not that comfortable with. I think it's you need to have a guy that has done it before. We've seen the Dodgers do that multiple times with Clayton Kershaw, and it's been fine because he's done that before. We've seen Max Scherzer do that in his career. We've seen Justin Verlander do that in his career. These are guys who have done that. When you've never really done that, then at that point I get a little bit apprehensive of making that decision. but what am I choosing? What's my other choice? And if my other choice isn't significantly better, then that's the dilemma that you have on your hands. I think at that point, yeah, you're choosing between Julio Teheran and Mike Foltynewicz. And Teheran has had some decent starts down the second half of the season, but he's an enormous underachiever in my book. He's 27 years old. He should be significantly better than he has been for this age of his career. He should be right in his prime. That's a guy who's been in the All-Star game a couple of times. He's been the opening day starter 5 years in a row. He's pitched in the postseason before, yet he never really separated himself this season from the rest of the pack. In fact, he dropped from the pack and was surpassed by three other guys. So that's my decision. And the good news is if you get into that scenario where you're down to an elimination game, you're down 2-1, and I'm either going with Foltynewicz on short rest or Teheran, who would be fully rested at that point, I have no idea which way you're going to go there. If Folty won game one, if he looked good in game one, then I'd probably go back to him on short rest if he feels like he can do it. If not, if game one was a game that you lost, and he wasn't his sharpest self, maybe you let him rest a little bit more and go Julio Teheran. This is, when it comes to the postseason, this is my best against your best, and there are no shortcuts. I'm going to put my best out there, and if I can't beat your best, then that's the way that it is. And I don't think there are any cheat codes or anything like that that you can drum up out of somebody having some kind of superhuman performance like we saw to Madison Bumgarner 3 years ago in the World Series. I don't know they really had another pitcher that did much of anything in that World Series. But moments like that are so few and far between. And if I got to go to my fourth guy, then he better be ready to go. And if he's better than yours, then fine. We can go play a game five. But if he isn't, you're the better team and you're going to advance and I'm going to go home. So that's a decision the Braves will have to make. And I think it comes down to what Folty did or did not do in that first game.
I want to switch to the American Leagues for a much, much more condensed version. That Braves analysis is fantastic. Your breakdown of the National League is fantastic. You can tell you've seen the league all year. You've seen some of the American League, too, probably not to the extent that you've seen the National League. The picture much clearer, again, as we're taping this on a Wednesday afternoon. The A's and the Yankees are going to play a wild card game, almost certainly at Yankee Stadium, but potentially in Oakland, but it looks like it's going to be in New York. The winner is going to get the Red Sox, who, as we tape this, are 106-51, just have had an incredible season. And then the Astros, winners of 100 games, the defending world champs, they're going to play Cleveland, who is scary, in my opinion, in a division series. Unlike the National League, where it's kind of a bunch of teams that you go, well, it's kind of, I don't know who's going to survive. The American League, it's a bunch of giants over there, and people are going to lose. Only one team's going to emerge from there. If I told you Boston didn't make the World Series, who would you think did?
I'd say Houston. I agree with you in the sense that I feel like that's what you're insinuating, that the Red Sox are the team to beat, but that doesn't mean that if they lose, I'd be shocked. I mean, this thing is, think of all the 100 win teams you could have over there. The Red Sox have already done it. The Yankees need three more wins to get to 100. The Astros have already won 100. And if the A's could win five of their final six games, then they could be sitting on 100 wins. That's amazing.
Easy. Yeah, it's incredible.
Those teams are that good. I think you got five teams over there that I think are better than any one team that the National League has. But I think Houston, simply because of what they accomplished last year, they've done it. And this is a team that they're not satisfied with one title. And I can tell you that by being down there at spring training this year and also a conversation that I had with Brian McCann in the offseason. We were talking about that bunch and how young they are and how good they are. And I said, okay, so how do you come back next year and stay hungry? He said, you would not believe how hungry these guys are. He said, talking to Bregman, talking to Altuve, talking to Correa, winning the World Series isn't the goal for them. He said, this is going to sound really weird, but they can say this because I think they're that good. They all feel like Cooperstown is the destination for them. They feel they're that good. And the way that they get there, obviously not just the individual numbers, but winning as a team for long periods of time and racking up multiple championships, they have very, very high, lofty goals. I think we live in a day and age now where you see somebody express their goals, articulate high goals, and people would say, oh, that's awfully conceited. Why would you even think something like that? But until you can articulate such a thing, I don't think you can accomplish it. And I like when guys collectively have very, very high goals like that. And it's kind of abrasive to hear guys say that. But I think that's fantastic. If I were an Astro fan, I'd be thrilled. If that's the goal and you're pursuing that kind of greatness and you're not just happy with one title or one MVP, that tells me that there's a hunger there that is going to keep me engaged in my baseball team for a very, very long time. So that team did it last year, and I fully anticipate it being a collision course between Houston and Boston, because while I think the Yankees and the A's and the Indians are darn good baseball teams, and they could all disrupt this whole thing. But it seems like the Red Sox and the Astros are on a collision course, and whoever comes out of that ALCS, you feel like has no problem winning the World Series. So it wouldn't shock me if the Astros found a way to take down Boston. I don't know that anybody else could take them down in a 7-game series. I like Cleveland and Oakland and New York, and they all have great elements to their ball club, but I just feel like Boston is so deep with their lineup. They have the top two MVP candidates in the American League in Betts and Martinez. They have unbelievable stuff in their rotation. I mean, you start with Sale and you go to Price, and then the whole lineup of guys in the rotation that's so good. And their bullpen is so good. And you finish it up with maybe the best closer in the game in Craig Kimbrel. So they have everything, and they're going to have home field throughout everything. So you know that in order to win the World Series, you have to go through Boston. And I think that the Astros would be the team that would have the least amount of fear taking that road to get the World Series.
All right, last thing, and it's because I'll admit I'm a little obsessed with it. I also find free agency to be fascinating. I know that October is all about the postseason, and then almost immediately the attention will turn to the Bryce Harper sweepstakes, the Manny Machado sweepstakes, what the Angels may or may not be able to get done to prevent a Mike Trout sweepstakes in a couple of years. I'll start with Harper. You've covered him a lot. You've seen the Nationals a lot there in the National League East. It certainly looks like he's finishing out his Nationals career and is going to go elsewhere. What are you hearing in baseball circles about the Nationals' chances to keep him, and if he doesn't stay in Washington, where he might go?
I know that he has expressed some interest in staying there, but let me throw some drama into this thing that's going to be really that's going to take this thing up another notch. The two top free agents out there, obviously Bryce Harper and Manny Machado. Manny Machado, I'm pretty sure, is represented by MVP Sports Agency. Bryce Harper is a Scott Boras guy. Those two groups absolutely hate each other. There is a rivalry there. I know that from talking to other agents. And I think they are viewing this thing as a competition. I want to get the very most for my guy if I'm MVP Sports Group. And if I'm Scott Boras, I want to get more for Bryce Harper than what MVP got for Manny Machado. There is a competition there, which is fascinating to me, and I don't think that's going to get talked about a whole lot, but that's the business side of this thing. I think there are plenty of suitors for both of those players outside of the two current places that they are. But I do think that the Dodgers are going to be making a very hard run at Manny Machado. It's hard for me to see another team putting up more than what LA is going to put up. That doesn't mean he's going to sign there, but I think outside of LA, I know that there's a desire for him to play in New York and play for the Yankees. That's interesting to me, and that's they could use him on the left side of that infield. They could find a spot for him at third base. But I think the Dodgers are going to make a pretty hard charge at him for certain and find a way to try to make that work. For Bryce Harper, I feel like you could see more teams pull up a chair to his table and try to negotiate for him. The Yankees would love to have Bryce Harper, but I think they'd want to put him at first base. And there are a lot of people that I speak with daily that feel like that's going to be what wins out ultimately, that Bryce Harper will be in pinstripes and playing first base and no longer an outfielder. That's really interesting. But I do think the Phillies, I do think the Cubs, I do think the Dodgers, I do think the Giants are all in play. I know that the Giants are a team that all summer long seemed to have a lot of rumors about their interest in Bryce Harper. But now that they parted ways with their general manager yesterday, Bob Evans, I wonder if that leads them in a place to where they say, okay, it's time for us to restart. Let's trade Madison Bumgarner. Let's restock our farm system, and let's get away from spending, because they have the second highest payroll in Major League Baseball this year, and they're a fourth-place team. So they've got to either fish or cut bait, either go back to the drawing board or keep spending crazy amounts of money and see if that turns things around. I don't know. But for those two guys, they're going to be 1 and 2, and I can see this lingering deep into the offseason, giving the stubbornness of those two agencies as they're trying to get the very most for their guy. So that's something that I'll be watching a lot this offseason. I don't think you're going to be shocked with the names that are going to be involved. In other words, I don't think you're going to see Bryce Harper go sign with the Twins or Manny Machado end up with Colorado or something like that. I do think it's going to be the normal cast of characters. At the end of it all, I do like that Harper to New York move. If he does not go there, I think the Nationals are going to make a pretty hard charge to try to keep him there. And outside of that, it might be the Chicago Cubs or the Philadelphia Phillies. That's the way I kind of look at it for Bryce Harper. For Manny Machado, to me, it comes down to the Dodgers or the Yankees. And the Yankees are in a position where they're thinking, which way do we want to go with this thing? Do we want to get Machado? Do we want to get Harper? How are we going to attack this thing? And I think they're in a position to go after both as hard as they want and spend a pretty good amount of money. So those are the teams that I expect to be in the running for those two guys, and we'll see between MVP or Scott Boras whose guy ends up with the biggest contract and the longest deal as well.
Yeah, that's fascinating stuff. It makes me feel better about a couple sources that I have. I've talked to some baseball people that I trust who said on Machado they think if he doesn't stay in L.A. that he ends up in New York or Philly. And then I've talked to people about Harper who think it's Cubs, Phillies. I've not heard that about the Yankees in first base, but when you said that, that makes a lot of sense. I wouldn't think any team could afford to sign them both.
Yeah, and that was the hot rumor with the Phillies about 3 weeks ago that they could be in the market for both. And look, the Phillies are going to be able to spend a ton of money. They have a TV contract that is through the roof. They're going to be able to spend a lot more money, and I think when they signed Jake Arrieta, they were thinking to themselves, this guy can bring us a lot of value on the mound. He can bring us a lot of value to being around these young pitchers like Nola and others. And we'll be able to afford him and other key free agent pieces in 12 months once we start spending that TV money contract that they have. So they're going to be a big spender. And, gosh, if they could go pull off both of those guys, I'd be absolutely blown away. I wouldn't expect that, but I do think they're going to be in the running for both of them and perhaps land one.
Last thing, we started with the Braves. We'll finish there. I know that we don't know what October will or will not bring for Atlanta other than they're going to be a part of at least one series. Do you anticipate Atlanta being a big spender this offseason, or do you think they sort of continue to stay the course and do this thing the way they've been doing it, because obviously it's worked?
I will answer that question the same way Alex Anthopoulos answered that question for me. And, of course, Alex, the Braves general manager, I asked him about free agency, and this was back in June. So this has been a few months, but I can't imagine this changed. I said, when it comes to free agency, what are you prepared to do? What are you targeting? What can you spend? Can you be a big spender? And he said, we can go after any one player who is on the market. And I said, so does that mean putting all your eggs in one basket with one big name? Or you trying to divvy that up a little bit and going to grab two or three guys? He said, that's the fork in the road that we're at. He said, we could be in the Harper sweepstakes. We could be in the Machado sweepstakes. We could be in the sweepstakes for any one player. And if they were to offer $300, $325, $350 deal to Harper, they could sign him. Now, that's probably going to be the only free agent signing that they have this offseason, but I think they could afford it. So they're going to be able to spend money. They want to spend money, and it's just a question of where. I think what they're going to do is they have had their eye on JT Realmuto for some time. They want a catcher really bad. They re-signed Tyler Flowers. The deal that they offered Tyler Flowers was a deal that was originally offered to Kurt Suzuki, and he said, I'd like to try free agency at the end of the year. They said, fine, fair enough. We'll let you go do that. And if things work out here, then fine. If not, we understand you probably want to get back to the West Coast, and that's something you can explore. But we have to have we have to lock down one of these catchers. So they went to Tyler Flowers with the same deal. Flowers, being a Georgia boy, signed the deal. So he'll be here, and the Braves would like to set up a scenario where he's your backup catcher. JT Realmuto is someone you'd have to go trade for. He's not a free agent till 2020. You'd have to go through arbitration with him in January, but the Braves have had a huge crush on him for a long time. And I think what they're trying to accomplish would be signing a free agent that they're looking for and making a big trade to grab someone that they're looking for. I think Romuto is the top target with whom he would trade for. And as far as free agency goes, I have no idea. There are a long list of guys that they could look at. It could be someone like a Patrick Corbin in Arizona, where they could add to their pitching rotation. It could be someone like Craig Kimbrell, if they really wanted to get aggressive and throw a $15, $16, $17 million a year deal at a guy who, by everyone I've talked to, would like to come back here. I would like to come back closer to home. So I think they're going to have one big signing and one big trade. And I think if you were to ask Alex Anthopoulos right now who your top two targets, one from each side, I think he'd say JT Romuto is the top guy they'd like to trade for, and a starting pitcher, or Craig Kimbrell out of the bullpen will be their top free agent choice going into the offseason.
Boy, that would really bolster a team that is already really good, and its future only looks brighter, assuming health. They have had a fantastic season. Enjoyed the visit immensely. That was a lot of fun for me. I hope you enjoyed it as well. Those of you who are listening, really appreciate it. Enjoy October. Like you said, it, even though it looks like Atlanta is due to get there repeatedly over the next few years, baseball is a cruel game, and you never know, and there are no guarantees. So enjoy the one guarantee that you've got, and I have a feeling it's going to be an interesting one for the Braves and a lot of other teams. So, again, Ben, thanks so much for the time, and I hope to talk to you soon.
You got it, Neil. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Talk to you then. Bye. Again, our thanks to Ben Ingram for his time today on the show. I hope you have enjoyed it. Appreciate you listening. Tell a friend. Give a review on iTunes. Hit some 5 stars for me if you would. I would appreciate that. We'll be back next week. We'll probably get back into some college and pro football. Have some guests that I'm working on, get back into the football thing. And then sometime in the next couple weeks, we'll do a pretty extensive NBA preview. Believe it or not, the NBA season less than 3 weeks away. So enjoy this time of year, football season, hitting its mid-stride in the college game, hitting the quarter pole in the pro game, baseball hitting the postseason, NBA season about to begin, the NHL season begin. It's a fun time. Ryder Cup this weekend as well. So a lot to enjoy if you're a sports fan, and I hope you enjoyed your time here in the Beer Garden. Until next week, talk to you then.